Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording from our studio in the heart of East County. Today we're going to tell you about a prominent Republican office holder in East County who has quit the Republican Party due to racism. We'll also talk about troubling racism concerns involving several members of President Donald Trump's cabinet. We'll have the latest on legal action by California over funding for sanctuary cities, and we'll tell you about a discrimination lawsuit filed by an El Cajon councilman against the city of El Cajon. On Crime Beat, learn about Grand Theft Avo, avocados that is, on Mount Helix. Learn about a series of invasion-style armed robberies against marijuana dispensaries in East County. Now, if you're looking for a pet, this Saturday is Clear the Shelters Day at San Diego County Shelters, and we'll have the details on today's show. On Green Scene, learn about the county's climate action plan and how you can submit public comments. Our newsmaker interview today is with Rebecca Smart, a ranger at Mission Trails Regional Park, who will be talking about dangers to dogs on local trails, particularly during hot weather. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up across our region, from Julian's Apple Days Festival to Oktoberfests and more. And finally, we'll take you on the road to Lake Jennings, where you can camp out in a teepee. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. La Mesa City Council member and Vice Mayor Christina Licio has quit the Republican Party over the party's failure to take a stand against racism. On her Facebook page, she posted, "I'm out of the Republican Party. I'll never be pro-choice, never be against the Second Amendment, but I cannot stand with anyone who will not say no to racism and prejudice. Count me as declined to state and in favor of liberty," she wrote. Her action comes on the heels of President Donald Trump claiming there are, quote, good people on both sides in the Charlottesville, Virginia tragedy, where a white supremacist rally included leaders carrying Nazi flags, torches, and Ku Klux Klan symbols. A Nazi sympathizer at the rally rammed a car into a crowd of protesters, killing a young woman and injuring 19 others. Trump took 2 days before denouncing Nazis and the Klan by name, but one day later backtracked on those statements and doubled down on his insistence that both sides were equally at fault. While some prominent officials in both parties have spoken out individually against Trump's remarks, as have the leaders of all four military branches and CEOs of many major corporations who quit his advisory business council, there has been no official censure or other action of Trump from the Republican-led Congress or the Republican National Party. Alicio further stated in her Facebook comments that anyone with true conservative beliefs should be willing to call him out, yet most just sit there, ignoring him, hoping some policy of his will somehow fit with their beliefs. He's abased Republican leaders with insults and threats, insulted their wives, she said, adding, "This is not in any way, shape, or form a person who should be protected by the Republican Party." In her resignation letter as an alternate to the Republican Central Committee in San Diego, she cited events in recent days and the party's inability or unwillingness to squarely denounce President Trump for his divisive comments, which have been widely condemned by conservative minds such as Bill Kristol and Charles Krauthammer. Alicia told the party, "It is impossible to see our party as the party of Lincoln or Reagan. I cannot with clear conscience continue to be a registered Republican." And she added, she will not be associated with a party that has descended to defending tribalism, divisiveness, and profound indecency. In an interview on San Diego Rostra, a libertarian and conservative-leaning site, Alicio said she is considering running for supervisor, but only if retiring supervisor Diane Jacob gives her endorsement for the race in 2020. Alicio added that she might return to the Republican Party if it ever returns to sanity. There is precedent for that. Randy Vopel left the Republican Party while serving as mayor of Santee to join a more conservative minor party, but later rejoined the GOP and was successfully elected to the state assembly, where he currently serves. Alicia, who has self-funded her own campaigns in the past, says she will continue to support qualified candidates, including both Republicans and Democrats. She recently drew fire from party leaders for crossing the aisle to endorse Jay Steiger, a Democrat, to fill a vacancy on the La Mesa Spring Valley School District Board. The board chose a church employee instead, despite Steiger's many years of service in the district, including on bond oversight commissions and as a parent teacher association president, by the way. La Mesa Councilman Colin Parent, a Democrat, posted on Facebook, "Proud of my council colleague Christine Alicia for leaving the GOP to protest Trump's failure to say no to racism and prejudice." "She is not alone," Parent wrote. "I've heard the same sentiment from many old friends in East County and La Mesa. She is representing well the views of La Mesa and the region by denouncing hate." But in a blistering post on San Diego Rostra, Brian Brady slammed Alicia's action as kabuki theater to position herself for a possible supervisorial run. "This isn't courage, it's a political stunt," he wrote. La Mesa politicians have a long history, however, of independence that hasn't hurt them in this city, though it's unclear what impact their actions might have had on any higher office aspirations. La Mesa Councilman David Allen left the Republican Party to join the Democratic Party in 2008 and won re-election later that year. He made the shift when George W. Bush was president and explained his shift this way. "I represent everybody. I don't agree with everything on either side, but we forgot about the working person," said Allen, a former union firefighter. "I'm going to do what's right." Long-serving former La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid, who held office in La Mesa for a quarter of a century, was known to cross the political aisle as well, a Republican. Madrid most notably ired GOP party officials and defied party rules when he endorsed New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, a Democrat, in the 2008 presidential primary. Madrid won re-election that same year and again in 2012. Current La Mesa Councilman Bill Baber, also a Republican, told the San Diego Union-Tribune last year during the Republican primary season, "I do not believe Donald Trump is fit to be president. He does not have the experience or character to handle the office." Vice Mayor Christine Alicia agrees and has shown the political backbone to stand up to her party, take a stand against racism, and leave. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
President Donald Trump's tolerance of violence and hate speech by white supremacist groups has long drawn criticism, brought to the forefront following deadly violence in Charlottesville, where a driver with Nazi leanings rammed into a crowd during a white supremacist rally, killing a woman and injuring 19 others. Trump waited 2 days to denounce the KKK and Nazi hate groups by name, after being rebuked by leaders of both parties for an earlier vague statement faulting both white supremacists and counter-protesters. But just 1 day later, Trump backtracked, claiming there were good people on both sides. The president's refusal to disavow torch-bearing hate groups and those marching with them has drawn stinging criticism from congressional leaders in both political parties, as well as from many activist groups that have mobilized protests, including 3,000 people who have gathered in San Diego and about 70 who demonstrated in El Cajon earlier this week. Trump has repeatedly said he is not a racist, but now a spotlight is being shown on not only his own controversial statements, but also several Trump cabinet members with prominent ties to white supremacists. Sebastian Gorka, deputy assistant to President Trump, wore an Order of Vitis badge, tunic, and ring shown on Fox News on the eve of Trump's inauguration. According to the U.S. State Department, this order was under the direction of the Nazi government of Germany during World War II, and its members could be deemed ineligible for admission to the U.S. The New York Times reported in April 2017 that Gorka has been accused of having links to far-right groups in Europe. He is also worked for Breitbart News, the outright media outlet formerly headed by Steve Bannon, which has provided a platform for right supremacist propaganda. Sebastian Gorka's wife, Catherine Gorka, ended the Trump administration's funding through Homeland Security for groups that combat white supremacy, Huffington Post reports. She has also bylined articles on Muslim extremism while ignoring violence by white supremacists. Yet in May, The FBI and Department of Homeland Security warned that white supremacist groups have carried out more attacks than any other domestic extremist group over the past 16 years. And were likely to carry out more attacks over the next year, even as President Trump continues to resist calling out white supremacists for violence, federal law enforcement has made it clear that it sees these types of domestic extremists as a severe threat. Foreign Policy concludes in an article published this week. Trump's Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, formerly an Alabama senator, was once denied a judicial seat due to congressional concerns over his actions as a U.S. attorney viewed by critics in Congress as racist. As Attorney General, he has diverted some civil rights enforcement funding set aside for protecting minorities' rights to instead investigate impacts of affirmative action on white students. The Guardian, in an article published this week, documents have many more Trump ties to white supremacist racists. Also of note, his cabinet is almost entirely white males, and a photo of White House interns shows that they are virtually all white, with no apparent effort made to provide racial, ethnic, or gender diversity among those close to the president. Ironically, even as Trump let loose another round of tweets defending his stances on Charlottesville and blasting media that report on his racial controversies, the most retweeted message of all time on Twitter was sent by former President Barack Obama, who quoted Nelson Mandela. Obama's tweet states, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin, or his background, or his religion." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jordan Damon.
El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso has threatened to file an employment discrimination complaint against the city over a resolution banning use of electronic devices by council members during city council meetings. Supporters say the ban is needed to assure that council members are paying attention and to assure that no outside communication is going on via email or social media during public hearings, which could violate state law. But Colasso, the youngest member of the council and the only one who uses a laptop computer to take notes, blasted the action. He said, "This agenda item, as laughable as it is just geared towards me." The city has offered to provide Colasso with a city-issued iPad with internet access disabled, but that could be used to take notes. But Colasso insisted that it would be too burdensome to have to transfer his notes between his personal computer and the city-issued iPad. Colasso stated during the council hearing, "There is a discrimination suit that I think is probably an option for me as the city is my employer." He clarified that he's not talking about suing El Cajon, but rather filing a complaint under the California Fair Employment Act. City Attorney Morgan Foley asked Colasso, "And discrimination is because you can't use an iPad like anybody else, or because you're being told you have to use this particular iPad," eliciting laughter from the audience. Colasso argued that the action discriminates against him as the only member who take notes on an electronic device, and also suggested he was targeted as the only Democrat on the council. But Foley pointed out that state law does not define people who use electronic devices or any political party as a protected class. Foley stated, "There's nothing in this policy that relates to you about your age, your gender, your sexual preference, or race or ethnicity." Mayor Bill Wells told a story of a trip to Sacramento and seeing legislators using iPads and cell phones while local state Senator Joel Anderson was speaking. The mayor said, "I thought it was just incredibly disrespectful to Senator Anderson, but more importantly, I just thought it was incredibly disrespectful to the democratic process." Councilmember Gary Kendrick said it's important for the public to see that officials aren't distracted by electronic devices, and Councilman Bob McClellan agreed. Councilman Steve Goebel concluded that the resolution was about trust, respect, and transparency, adding, "This is public service, not self-service." The resolution to limit the city council use of electronic devices passed 4-1, with Councilman Colasso opposed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show. After that episode was taped, we received confirmation that Councilman Colasso has indeed now filed a discrimination complaint against the city of El Cajon.
Governor Jerry Brown says California may sue the Trump administration over its threat to cut federal funding from cities that refuse to comply with the federal immigration crackdown. In July, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that state and local governments seeking funding must certify they are not sanctuary cities that refused to assist federal authorities in enforcing immigration laws. In an interview on NBC's Meet the Press, Governor Brown said, "I think a few judicious forums to resolve this dispute between federal government and California can be very helpful for the whole country and in a dispassionate way." The governor added that the decision would ultimately be up to the Golden State's Attorney General, Javier Becerra. California isn't the only place threatening legal action over this issue. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel has said that his city will sue the Trump administration, claiming that it is illegal for the federal government to withhold public safety money. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. A resident on Mount Helix says he recently caught a woman stealing avocados off trees at his home before dawn last week. The woman was driving a Lexus luxury car. The resident, Ellen Van Antwerp, told 10 News that a motion sensor alerted him. He posted a photo of the startled woman and her license plate number on the Mount Helix Next Door forum, eliciting over 100 comments, many from residents reporting similar thefts of avocados and other fruits by thieves who left trees stripped bare. Van Antwerp said that he filed a report with the Sheriff's Department but declined to press charges, asking that instead the woman be given a stern warning. That news disappointed some neighbors on Next Door, who voiced concerns that the woman could victimize others in the future. One suggested the woman be asked to pay restitution for the value of the avocados reportedly taken. It is unclear whether the startled woman merely intended to make a gargantuan batch of guacamole or may have intended to resell the purloin avocados, known as California's green gold. Avocados can retail for a dollar or more apiece. The Mount Helix area is one of the ideal climate microzones in the state for growing the knobby green fruits, which soften and turn nearly black on the outside when ripe. Ironically, the fruits in this case were picked green. Avocado consumption has been rising at 15% a year in the U.S., The Guardian reports. Increased demand has led to soaring prices south of the border as well as in the U.S. So many Mexicans can no longer afford what was once a staple in their diets. Could these facts be fueling a black market trade in avocados? Would-be thieves should be aware that large-scale avocado heists are not viewed as petty thefts in California, where growers' rights are protected by a special state law. The California Penal Code Chapter 5 makes stealing avocados or other crops with a wholesale value of over $250 a felony. That revelation led one next-door poster to dub the reported local avocado heist Grand Theft Avo. Sergeant Miragishi at the Rancho San Diego Sheriff's Station is warning that his command area has experienced a trend of violent takeover-style robberies of marijuana dispensaries in recent months. And he adds, in each case, armed guards were not a deterrent. The suspects were all armed. Dispensary staff members failed to call for help, even after people were physically assaulted. And in some cases, the staff members refused to allow law enforcement to enter, causing a standoff situation that stretched the department's resources in helping victims. The latest armed robbery occurred on August 10, shortly before 9 p.m., reported by a bystander. Deputies were dispatched to the dispensary on Bancroft Drive in Spring Valley and set up a perimeter. Sergeant Miragishi says no one associated with the dispensary called law enforcement to report the crime. He says this reluctance by staff to summon help has created a dangerous environment, not only for dispensary staff members, but for the public that patronized the facility. In this case, that caused a delay in deputies being able to conduct a safety sweep of the business to check for anyone needing medical attention and to start the investigation to apprehend the suspects, he adds. The thieves forced their way into the dispensary, disarmed a security guard, and ordered employees to the ground. The suspects fled after the robbery and remain outstanding. Both are believed to be armed and dangerous. No description has been provided. All the dispensaries within the Rancho San Diego substation's area of responsibility are illegal ones. We asked the sheriff for records on whether legally licensed dispensaries have had similar crimes or not. A licensed legally operating dispensary near Gillespie Field includes a metal detector at the entrance and video cameras that broadcast live footage to the sheriff's department, features that may deter thieves and provide video evidence to help capture anyone bold enough to attempt a robbery inside the facility. The county is phasing out its legal facilities over the next several years. However, some cities, including Lemon Grove and La Mesa, have had voters approve ballot initiatives allowing recreational or medical marijuana facilities to open in the near future. So local cities may want to take a close look at how effective security measures used elsewhere have been at dissuading violent crimes that put safety not only of the employees, but also the customers, including medical marijuana patients, at risk.
See a pothole, graffiti, or other problem in San Diego's unincorporated communities? Now you can download the county's Tell Us Now app, enabling you to take a photo and instantly submit a complaint and track its progress. The app is available for Apple and Android phones. You can find this app and others by Googling San Diego County App Store. The City of San Diego has a similar app called Get It Done. The county's App Center also has several other useful apps you can download. The San Diego Emergency app gives you tools to prepare for and respond to emergencies. Pulse Point empowers individuals trained in CPR within covered communities with the ability to provide life-saving assistance to victims of cardiac arrest. The Finding Rover app that uses facial recognition helps owners find lost dogs. VAAP is a free mobile application that helps service members and military families by connecting them to the critical services they need, anywhere, anytime. The Fight the Bite app enables you to help prevent West Nile virus by anonymously reporting green swimming pools, mosquito breeding, and dead birds for treatment or testing. Find out where to recycle your bottles and cans as well as use motor oil and filters in your neighborhood with the Where Can I Recycle app. There is also a Know Your H2O app to help you improve water quality at your home or business. The Zoning and Property Information app lets you look up zoning and land use information for any address in the county. Breathe Wells lets you see real-time levels of ozone and pollution on an hourly basis in your area. The CalWIN app helps you get information on public assistance programs and track your benefits. It also alerts you if a disaster is declared in your zip code. Use the San Diego County Library app search to find or renew books, DVDs, audiobooks, CDs, and more from your mobile phone. You can also find your nearest library location and hours. My Parks is a mobile application that allows smartphone users to find and explore county parks of interest. The application is location aware, so users can discover county parks nearest to their location, including hours, directions, features, and amenities. The County News Center app offers the latest news and videos about the county. The site's mobile version makes it easy to get that information wherever you are. With the Pay Property Taxes app, you can pay your property taxes anytime, anywhere, and get videos with tips on how to pay your taxes. There's also a California Child Support mobile app that lets you access your child support account on the go. You can also find current beach water quality status from San Diego beaches 365 days a year with the San Diego Beach Water Quality app, which also has information on beach closures and advisories. Check out the San Diego County App Center to learn more or to download these apps from your mobile phone. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Looking for a new pet to add to your family? This Saturday, August 19th, is Clear the Shelters Day, and San Diego County Animal Services is joining shelters around the region to waive adoption fees in order to get as many pets as possible into homes. Qualified applicants can choose from dogs, cats, and rabbits. Even some chickens, turtles, and guinea pigs will be available. Dogs and cats will be altered, vaccinated, and microchipped. Rabbits will be altered and microchipped, all at no cost to the adopter. County Animal Services Director Daniel D'Souza says these pets need a forever home with a caring family And in return, he says, their owners will get the unconditional love that only a pet can give. Clear the Shelters is part of a campaign by NBC TV Studios and Telemundo to find loving homes for the millions of pets who end up in the nation's shelters each year. Cities across the nation take part in the event. Since the one-day Clear the Shelters adoption drives began in 2015, more than 73,000 pets have been adopted. Several local shelters take part as well. The final tally for our region last year came to 777 animals adopted. At the county shelters, 304 animals found homes during the 2016 drive. Currently, more than 300 animals are available at the county's three animal care facilities in Bonita, Central San Diego, and Carlsbad. You can visit these shelters this Saturday during Clear the Shelters Day from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And to speed up the process, you can download the adoption application off County Animal Services website and fill it in at home. Renters should also bring a copy of their lease to show it's okay to have a pet at their home. For more information about County Animal Services, visit sddac.com or call 619-767-2675. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jordan Damu of the Green Scene Report. The County of San Diego has released the Draft Climate Action Plan. The public has until September 25th to make comments on the draft plan, which is designed to cut greenhouse gases in the county's unincorporated communities as well as those related to county government operations. It seeks to meet state requirements for renewable energy with actions that balance environmental, economic, and community interest while taking into account the county's largely rural character. That balance between state mandates and rural character has been a bone of contention in the past, with some rural residents staunchly resisting industrial-scale wind and solar projects that scrape bare large tracts of habitat. And in the case of wind, add towers 500 feet tall that could create problems from noise, infrasound, and flashing lights. The draft plan and a draft supplemental environmental impact report can be reviewed on the County Planning and Development Services Climate Action Plan webpage. After the public review and comments period end, the San Diego County Planning Commission and the San Diego County Board of Supervisors will hold hearings early next year. The draft plan was created with input from local residents and more than 50 stakeholder groups. For more information about the draft plan and links to submit your comments, you can visit the San Diego County Planning and Development Services Climate Action Plan webpage.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Park Ranger Rebecca Smart. Rebecca is a ranger with the Mission Trails Regional Park, which is one of the largest urban parks in America. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
How large is the park now? I know they've expanded.
The park is just under 8,000 acres, so you are correct. It is one of the largest open space preserve areas in the United States.
It has a lot of beautiful, beautiful hiking trails, including the trail on Coles Mountain, which is one of the most popular, if not the most popular,
in San Diego County. But we're here today because Rebecca gave me a call and reached out and told me that, frankly, she is tired of, unfortunately, having to rescue a lot of dogs that get in trouble on this trail, and worse, carrying dead dogs off. So she wanted us to bring her on the show and kind of get a warning out to folks that in this extreme hot weather we've been having, how dangerous this can be for pets. So thank you for caring, Rebecca.
Absolutely. This is my passion. The number one element to remember about dog fatalities on trails is that it is entirely preventable. Accidents happen. You may fall or twist an ankle at some point, but this is entirely preventable with just a little bit of prior planning and thought for your pet.
Yeah. Now, you've told me that in a typical year recently, we've been seeing 24 dogs on average dying on that trail alone. That's just staggering. What has the park done so far to try to warn people about this?
Well, like you said, it is staggering, and one is always too many. But yes, there are probably dozens each season that pass away due to heat stress and heat stroke on trails. The city of San Diego and our ranger team works tirelessly to try to help educate people on trails and make sure that folks know before they set out and before they have a tragic experience that it is dangerous for pets. Mission trails temperatures range from, say, 80 degrees to over 100 degrees. And that type of weather can last from May on through October. If you're coming from a coastal area and not acclimated to the type of weather at Mission Trails and mountain preserves, you could be in for a very deadly experience with your pet.
Yeah, I know you've told me that they put up signs recently warning people not to bring dogs on this trail, and that there's now a penalty if somebody does that and their dog has trouble, that they might even be fined or cited for animal cruelty.
That's correct. We do have warning signage placed at every trailhead, and we do always come from a place of education and care first. But the public should know and be aware that for those folks that do disregard signage and disregard warnings, that they can be cited for numerous offenses, animal cruelty, which is a misdemeanor citation, as well as inhumane treatment and lesser offenses. So for egregious cases of disregard, the public can and will be cited.
So what are some guidelines? Obviously, a lot of people love their dogs. Hiking with dogs is a popular adventure, and a lot of dogs probably enjoy it too. But how can you enjoy the outdoors here in San Diego with your dog and minimize the chances that your dog will be put at risk? Prevention, obviously, is far better than having to deal with a pet in distress. So first of all, are there times of the year, hours of the day, when you just shouldn't hike with your dog, or are there temperature guidelines? What do you recommend?
Absolutely. We recommend that during warmer weather that folks leave their pets at home. So during the heat of the day, say from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. when the sun is really at its peak, you do not want to bring your dog out hiking on mountain trails. That goes for mission trails or any other mountainous open space area within the county.
Right. I'd like to mention here that while we're talking about trails in Mission Trails Regional Park, there have been a lot of problems in Cleveland National Forest, and in fact, the two trails with the worst record in terms of rescuing both people and dogs or having dogs expire are the Three Sisters Falls Trail and the Cedar Creek Falls Trail in Cleveland National Forest. Both are very steep with little to no shade, much like the Coles Mountain Trail.
Correct.
What are the guidelines in terms of how much water one should bring along for your dog when you're hiking, or for that matter, yourself?
Well, absolutely. The guideline to remember is to always bring more than you think you're going to need. If you're planning on bringing a liter for every mile that you and your dog hike, make sure to bring extra. Oftentimes, I will be out on trail and someone else will need it. And you can essentially really help a situation if someone else does not bring enough water. So always bring more than you think you'll need. With pets, I'd like to emphasize that bringing drinking water along for your pet is absolutely essential, no matter the time of day. So bring some kind of collapsible bowl. If your pet doesn't drink out of a water bottle, make sure that they have water along. But keep in mind that during the heat of the day, when you're exercising your dog, especially on a mountain trail, that combination of exertion and exposure to the elements can be so brutal that drinking water alone will not suffice to keep your pet safe.
Yeah, they can get overheated very, very quickly. And I understand that some breeds, while it can happen to any dog, there just was a husky that died up there, and they're a very hardy breed, but that some breeds are more prone to this and will feel the heat in extreme ways more quickly.
Absolutely. Always gauge your pet just like you would your own physical activity levels. Certain breeds like boxers, bull terriers, bulldogs, pit bulls are very sensitive to heat stroke. They have shorter legs and a shorter snout, a shorter nose, which makes breathing more difficult for them. So you'll notice that those breeds, often before they even get out on the trail, are overheating and very rapid panting.
Yeah. Now, another thing you can do is to work up your dog's endurance by starting with smaller, shorter level trails, maybe trails in shade, before you even think about an extreme trail like that, even in the best of weather, the coolest of weather. That said, even on level trails, in extreme heat, there can be damage to dogs' paws, right?
Yes, dogs' paws can blister and scab and bleed very easily on pavement, on uneven terrain, on the type of rocky soil that we have here in San Diego County.
Yeah, it's very hot, very, very quickly.
It's very hot, so always be mindful of the temperature of the pavement. If it feels too hot to the touch for you to imagine hiking barefoot with a fur coat on, then it is absolutely too dangerous for your pet.
Very true. It's always a good idea, of course, to bring a cell phone along with GPS. While typically you have great reception out there in Mission Trails, especially on some of these other backcountry trails in Cleveland National Forest and elsewhere, where you may have spotty reception, it's not a complete answer. But you should also be aware that there's kind of a pro and con to hiking in the evening. It's cooler for the dog if you're going to bring them. But the downside of that is, you've told me, the rangers are off duty after what time?
Well, it depends on the park, but most mountain trails are open from sunrise to sunset, meaning that is when staff is there. Mm-hmm. We do suggest that if you must hike with your dog, you want to come out very early in the morning. If you're only able to hike in the evening, just be mindful that there may not be staff available wherever you're at.
Yeah.
And it's at your own discretion. So if you need help, another reason why you need to have a plan. Know the difficulty of the trail ahead of time. Know what kind of temperatures to expect that day. Before I start work every day, I always check my phone to see what the weather is going to be like at Mission Trails.
Yeah.
Just so I can have an idea of what to expect for that day.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. And also, certainly in these summer months, thunderstorms is also a possibility too. And you don't want to be on a mountain if there are going to be lightning strikes. Now, there's one more trail danger that we haven't talked about yet here in East County, and that's rattlesnakes. What can people do when they're hiking to minimize the chances that their pet would be bitten by a rattlesnake, or for that matter, themselves?
When you see wildlife of any kind, but rattlesnakes as well, on a trail, first of all, consider yourself kind of lucky to witness natural habitat. It's great that we still have places where we can see wildlife. If you see a snake, our best suggestion is to let it do its thing, so to speak.
Just stop and freeze and wait for it to move on.
You never want to put your hands or feet in a place where you can't see. Snakes often rest in shady shrub areas. Mm-hmm. You always want to keep your dog on a leash for
Yes.
their safety and for yours. There are multiple reasons to keep your pet leashed, including wildlife. Dogs are attracted to things that run, like rabbits. If a dog was to chase a little critter into the bush and then come upon a rattlesnake, it could be a very, very bad day.
Yeah.
Now, veterinary clinics do offer something called a rattlesnake vaccine.
But those only buy you time. They don't really save your dog from a snake bite. What I, from my understanding, we just did a story on this, is that at best it will just buy you time by delaying the effect of the venom and giving you a little more time to get to the vet. So we still need to get the dog to the vet on an emergency basis.
Absolutely. Rattlesnake aversion training is also offered for animals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you live in a mountainous or rural area or spend a lot of time outdoors in areas where there are snakes, you might want to look into some of those other rattlesnake training info.
Yeah.
But the best judgment or rule of thumb is to just let a snake pass. If it is on trail and it is a hazard, feel free to try to call the main ranger line at the park, wherever you're at. Let the staff know that there's a snake on the trail. If there is someone available, we always try to respond.
Interesting. So they can come move the snake.
Yes, we would actually come physically move the snake, but let us do that. You never want to put yourself in any kind of danger.
Yeah, I don't think most people are going to need a lot of convincing to not try moving the rattlesnake by themselves, hopefully.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. I certainly want to say the trails in Mission Trails Regional Park are absolutely beautiful, and we really don't want to discourage anybody from going and enjoying that or bringing your dog along, but just do it in a safe way, folks. Wait until the weather's cooler and, you know, and pace yourself and your dog, and you can really get out and enjoy nature and see some beautiful things and make sure to keep your dog safe as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Miriam. And if I could just add, for any folks out there that would like to get involved in volunteering at places like Mission Trails, we can always use the help in trying to educate people.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of outreach and prevention education, which is what this is all about. If you're interested in helping with canine-related issues, please contact me. I'd love to have your help on some of this. And again, if you see something, say something. If you see an animal or a person in distress, no matter what trail you're on, contact staff, contact public safety. You may indeed save a life.
Very important words of wisdom. If you've just tuned in, listeners, we have been speaking with Rebecca Smart, who is a ranger at Mission Trails Regional Park. And listeners, the most important takeaway from today's show that Ranger Smart wants you all to know is to be sure not to take your dog on steep mountain trails such as Coles Mountain from Memorial Day in late May through the fall months. Wait until the weather's cooler, because they've had over 24 dogs die in the last year on that Coles Mountain Trail alone, and we don't want your dog to be one of them. You can reach out and contact her or get more information about the trails at the park by visiting Mission Trails Regional Park's website at mtrp.org. Thank you very much, Rebecca, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ in the heart of East County.
Thank you, Miriam. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a jazz concert at Mission Trails, the Heroes in Concert in El Cajon, and the finale of Santee's Summer Concert Series with the Mighty Untouchables.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Ramona Country Fair, the Barona and Saquon Powwows, Descanso's Deep Pit Barbecue, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, the Alley Cat Art Walk, Julian Apple Festival, Julian Music Festival, Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, and more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more. The M3 Jazz Trio will perform at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, August 20th from 3 to 4 p.m. These versatile young musicians play a wide variety of musical genres from classical, jazz, and gospel to pop and rock, inspired by great jazz masters, while adding their own twist to classic jazz tunes. For information and directions, you can visit Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
Cajon Classic Cruises continues each Wednesday night from 5 to 8 p.m. on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. The next shows are Classic Car Appreciation Night, August 23rd, and for motorcycle enthusiasts, the Harley-Davidson Stampede on August 30th. You can find the entire summer and fall schedule of Cajon Classic Cruises at downtownelcajon.com.
El Cajon offers its summer concerts on Friday nights all summer long. The next shows are The Heroes on August 18th and Back to the Garden August 25th. For details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Santee's summer concert series ends on August 24th with variety music by the Mighty Untouchables. The season-end concert runs from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East. On August 17th, Upstream will perform Caribbean and reggae music. Santee's summer concert series ends on August 24th with variety music by the Mighty Untouchables.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Ramona Country Fair will be held August 24th through the 27th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Crafts, carnival rides, contests, vendors, live entertainment, fair food, and lots of fun are highlights of this event. A Western show and the second Ramona Motorcycle Rally are also being held this year. The fair is open Thursday and Friday evening, August 24th and 25th, and all day on Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th. For full hours and details, visit the Ramona Country Fair's Facebook page.
Commemorative Air Force Air Group 1 invites you to attend their monthly breakfast meeting on Saturday, August 26th at 9 a.m. at their hangar on Gillespie Field in El Cajon. Guest speakers will include heroic World War II veterans speaking about their experiences, brave air crews that flew B-24s in England over the D-Day invasion, Iwo Jima and Berlin airlift, and more. There is an excellent opportunity to hear from the heroes that were there tell it in their own words. These men represent a piece of World War II living history that is rapidly disappearing. For more information, visit the Air Group 1 website at ag1caf.org.
Thelma, Stan, and Ollie will be the theme at the next gathering of the Saps at Sea, the Laurel and Hardy Sons of the Desert Association, in San Diego on August 26th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The event highlights works of Thelma Todd. This bubbly blonde was not only a highly respected actress and comedian, but a longtime favorite of the Saps, featured in several hilarious comedy clips that will be shown.
The 47th Annual Barona Powwow will be held September 1st through the 3rd at the Barona Reservation Powwow Grounds in Lakeside. Native American dancers from across the United States will compete for prizes, and the public is welcome to attend. You can also shop for Native American arts, crafts, jewelry items, and more, plus sample foods such as Indian fry bread tacos. For details, visit Barona Powwow on Facebook.
The Julian Music Festival celebrates the end of summer on September 16th at the Mangini Winery in Julian from 1 to 7 p.m. The festival features Americana, pop rock, Latin, jazz, adult contemporary, folk, Celtic music, and more. Tickets are required and are available at julianmusicfestival.com.
Savor the flavors of slow-cooked barbecue beef at Descanso's 80th Annual Deep Pit Barbecue on September 3rd from 11 to 5 p.m. at Our Lady of Light Catholic Church. In addition to the delicious food, you can enjoy boot-scootin' country western music by Smith and Western, crafts, vendors, kids' games, and prize drawing. For more information, visit eastcountymagazine.org and click on our events section.
The Julian Arts Guild will hold its fall art show on September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Julian Town Hall. This is a free event showcasing the works of talented Julian artists. Artworks displayed will include weaving, ceramics, gourd painting, drawing, and mixed media. For more information, you can visit julianartsguild.org.
The Sequon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its 28th annual powwow on September 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Sequon Reservation's powwow grounds next to the Sequon Casino in El Cajon. The three-day tribal gathering attracts participants from across the nation and is open to the public. Sequon's powwow features traditional Native American dances, hand drum contest, bird singing and dancing competitions, peon games, authentic Indian cuisine, and more. You can find scheduling details at the Saquon Powwow Facebook.
The first annual Ramona Grape Stomp is set for September 9th from 12 noon to 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center Pavilion at 421 Aqua Lane in Ramona. To celebrate the harvest of grapes throughout the Ramona Valley, this fun family event will offer attendees the opportunity to squish grapes between their toes in grape stomping challenges, with prizes awarded to the best stompers. Attendees can also taste award-winning wine from local wineries and check out food, arts and crafts, and children's events. The Ramona Grape Stomp is being presented by the Ramona Rotary Club, the Ramona Senior Center, and the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association. Proceeds will benefit education and support services provided by these organizations, such as a senior nutrition program, college scholarships, 4th of July fireworks, the Ramona Boys and Girls Clubs, and education on this fast-growing wine region. You can get tickets at RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
Lakeside's River Park Conservancy will present its 11th annual Once in a Blue Moon Gala and auction at the River Valley Equestrian Center on the evening of September 16th. You're invited to help honor partners in conservation and raise funds for science programs for kids. This year's event includes dinner and auction in an exhibition polo match. You can learn more about the Lakeside River Park Conservancy and get tickets for Once in a Blue Moon by clicking the events tab at lakesideriverpark.org.
You're invited to the Alley Cat Art Walk on September 15th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Guests can enjoy an evening of art while visiting local galleries, also savoring food and drinks, plus live bluegrass and jazz music in the alley between Raya and East Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Arts and crafts vendors will have displays and products for sale, and guests can win prizes. Proceeds benefit St. Madeline Sophie Center, which assists developmentally disabled adults. For more information, you can visit stmsc.org.
If you love apples, the Julian Apple Days Festival on September 23rd and 24th is a place to be. Located at Mangini Winery in historic Julian, the event features Julian's famous apple pie, gold panning demonstrations, a falconry performance, live music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contest, and more. This festival harkens back to the early 1900s when Julian won a prestigious award from an apple growers association and began a fall Apple Day festival. The town now has 2-month-long apple celebrations culminating with the Apple Festival and the coronation of Mr. and Mrs. Apple Days. You can learn more at visitjulian.com and click on the calendar of events to find details on the Apple Days Festival and many more fall festivities.
Celebrating its 44th year, the popular La Mesa Oktoberfest will run from Friday, September 29th through Sunday, October 1st, bringing 3 days of Prost, or cheer. In addition to live German music and other entertainment, many vendors and crafts, you can also enjoy a beer garden serving up German and craft beers, plus new this year, craft cocktails. For more information, you can visit LaMesaOktoberfest.org.
The German-American Club of San Diego hosts its annual Oktoberfest at its headquarters in El Cajon over 2 weekends, September 29th through October 1st, and again, October 6th through the 8th. You can feast on authentic German fare from roast ox on a spit to German pancakes, sauerkraut, and bratwurst. A German band flown in from Bavaria will perform German music ranging from polkas and waltzes to beer-drinking songs. You'll also find vendors selling a variety of crafts. For details, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
Step back in time to a fur trading and colonial camp from the 1700s to 1840s at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous. This event takes place October 13th through the 22nd at the Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. You can see demonstrations of survival skills such as cooking, archery, tomahawk throwing, black powder shooting, and tool making. For more information, you can visit the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous page on Facebook.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
See you around East County! See you around East County!
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
If you love camping but don't want to lug around camping gear, now you can camp out at Lake Jennings in a teepee. Teepee is a Lakota Sioux Indian word meaning living in. Long ago, the Native Americans used buffalo hides to make their teepees, which were toted on horseback from site to site across the Great Plains. Lake Jennings' modern-day teepees are made of canvas from Colorado and pine wood poles from Montana. They're spacious. Each measures 20 feet in diameter with room to sleep an entire family. Also new at Lake Jennings are kayak rentals. It takes about an hour to paddle around the beautiful lake with mountain views or just float for a while and let the stress melt away. The lake also offers rowboats and motorboats, fishing, miles of hiking trails, a kid's playground, tent camping, RV camping, and a group camping site. A morning on the water, afternoon on the trail, and evening by a campfire is an idyllic way to relax and feel the rejuvenating power of nature. Though you can easily envision yourself living in the past as you unwind in a teepee by the shores of Lake Jennings, the lake does have some modern-day conveniences, including free Wi-Fi. Now, the teepees, kayaks, and other new additions here are all part of a successful effort to save this campground from closing. Just 3 years ago, when Helix Water District took back ownership of the lake from the County of San Diego, the campground was losing money, and some directors wanted to shut it down. But Director Joel Scalziti, who was newly elected back then, convinced the board to let him form a committee to find ways to save the campground. Scalziti now says he's really proud about turning this campground over the past 3 years. Now it's finally in the green, he announced. The lake is actually a reservoir, storing treated Colorado River water for use across East County, as well as a hidden gem for outdoor enthusiasts to discover. It's located in Lakeside, just 20 minutes from San Diego off of Interstate 8, though it feels like a world away. Scalziti credits Kyra Haley, the lake recreation manager, for coming up with successful ideas to save the lake. Haley calls Lake Jennings a great, great place and says she loves taking a morning float on the lake's calm waters in a kayak with her morning cup of coffee. The teepees are already proving to be revenue generators in their first weeks of operation, and all you have to do is show up and bring your sleeping bags. The teepees have drawn one criticism. Rudy Reyes, an archaeology instructor, notes that teepees are not indigenous to San Diego County, where the Kumeyaay Native Americans originally lived in dwellings made of willows. Reyes says Helix Water should have consulted local tribes before adding the teepees, but there's a simple solution, he agrees. He hopes to see an educational exhibit added at the lake to teach visitors about local Kumeyaay history, which dates back 12,000 years, as well as more facts about teepees. For Scalziti, the teepees were part of a broader effort to save this local treasure and provide a unique experience for campers. He concludes, "We love to feel that we have something here for the community, a place for recreation, a place where people can come and bring their families and create memories for their kids so that when they grow up, they can bring their kids here too." Reporting from Lake Jennings on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.